The thrill and excitement of March Mania is here, and DraftKings Sportsbook, one of America's top-rated sportsbook apps, is giving new customers a shot to turn $5 into $150 instantly in bonus bets with any college basketball bet. You can find all the lines and available odds, of course, at the DraftKings Sportsbook app. North Carolina listeners, don't forget, DraftKings Sportsbook is now live in your state. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app and use code SBNFL. New customers can bet $5 to get $150 instantly in bonus bets only at DraftKings Sportsbook with code SBNFL. The crown is yours. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER or in West Virginia, visit www.1800gambler.net. In New York, call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY. In Connecticut, help is available for problem gambling. Call 888-789-7777 or visit ccpg.org. Please play responsibly on behalf of Boot Hill Casino and Resort. 21 plus, age varies by jurisdiction, void in Ontario. Bonus bets expire 168 hours after issuance. See dkng.com/bball for eligibility, deposit restrictions, terms, and responsible gaming resources.
Welcome back to the 750. I am your ORJ Ochoa. He is your 75. Two-time Super Bowl champion, Mr. Tony Casillas. And Tony, we had a good ride, man. We had a good ride, but the Cowboys season is officially over.
You know, partner, it's great to be with you here on Tuesday as we record the 750, but I still have that fandom hangover. Let me just tell you that I think Saturday's game was probably the most into it that I've been into a game since I've been since post-retirement. And I was in a tavern with like 10 or 12 of our friends. You know, had my polo on, had my whiteout shirt, and I was like leading the chant and just still kind of feeling it Tuesday. It's, you know, it's one thing about the playoffs, unlike any other sports where you have a series of games, best of seven. You know, you lose one game, you're done.
Yeah.
It's very anticlimactic.
It's interesting that you say that it was probably the game you were the most into post-retirement.
Yeah.
Because for me, I feel like the losses to the Packers in the division around the last couple times, I feel like those hurt significantly more. And we'll flesh this out, but I feel like the current Cowboys team, they overachieved, and I feel like they ended right where they were. Like I never thought they were going to win the Super Bowl. I feel like they were a top eight team that was capable of some special moments, but was never going to be able to compete with the elite teams, and that's what happened.
Well, I mean, I picked them to lose, but really deep down inside, I thought they had a really realistic chance of winning. And yeah, I mean, I guess, yeah, I agree with you there. But I just, there's something about this season. I just felt, I bought into what they were doing at the end of the season. And I thought that they were a team that was really peaking at the end. A lot of other teams have done that. And they've done that over years. And I just felt like the way it happened, it was almost, someone hit them, kicked them right in the gut defensively, and they just weren't able to get back up. It's just kind of one of those feelings after a game.
It's just, you know, I mean, so they lose to the Rams, are we shocked? And I know we're sad. Like, there's a difference between being sad and shocked, because the Rams were the team. Since March, people have been saying the Rams are the team. Sean McVay and Ndamukong Suh, Aaron Donald, Todd Gurley, all these guys and all this money and everything they've done. I mean, you know, it was going to happen. They were going to run into a buzzsaw, and they did, you know, and that's just the way it is, unfortunately.
Well, yeah, it is, and I guess maybe I didn't believe as much in the Rams as I did early on the first part of the season.
Sure, when they that's were just fair.
Yeah, and so I think it was kind of that, but look, I mean, that's one thing about teams that you find out in the playoffs. You really find out what their DNA is and, you know, who they are, and the names you just mentioned, you know, you Jared Goff and then Sean McVay is a tremendous play caller, which it looked like, you know, the Cowboys defense is so discombobulated with what was going on. And then Ndamukong Suh decided he wanted to show up. And, you know, and a lot of things happen. Good teams, a lot of things happen like that. And the Cowboys just ran into a buzzsaw when they went out to L.A.
It's unfortunate that the Cowboys season ended. Poetically, it ended in California where it started, at the hands of the Rams on a Saturday night in the divisional round, and now, Tony, everybody's mad. Everybody's pissed off because the Cowboys haven't been to an NFC Championship game in 23 years. This is the
I'm
Cowboys.
I'm tired of it. You know what? I am really tired of it. And here's the thing. I got friends of mine sending me these memes of, you know, the Cowboys, a picture of a current Cowboy cheerleader with two cheerleaders that look like they're my grandma's age. These are the alumni cheerleader back when the Cowboys won the Super Bowl. So I am tired of all that noise. I am tired of hearing it's been all, you know, eight losses on the road, playoff games, and it's been so damn long. And yeah, I mean, I guess that kind of seeps in a little bit too much.
Well, I think, you know, call a spade a spade. It sucks. You know, it sucks. It everybody wants to win the Super Bowl, and only one team can, and that's what makes it awesome. You know, you've got two Super Bowl rings, and, you know, you're part of a very, very small group of people that have that, and yet how many people are pissed off that they don't have those rings because they wanted them those years? You know what I mean? It's
well,
what makes
I understand
the game great.
That, but I think it just kind of really – it makes you – sit there and reflect on how long it's been. And there's not too many chances you get to be able to get the opportunity to actually try to make a run. And I think part of the fandom, and I guess that's the best way to describe it, kind of came out in me. And I don't think by any means it was unrealistic expectations. I don't think anyone was unrealistic to think the Cowboys could go out and win. Now the point spread and a lot of other things didn't dictate that. But I think it's just the way it happened and the way things happened during the game. Everything that the Cowboys hung their hat on this year is exactly how they got beat on Saturday. So I think maybe that's the whole issue here.
Yeah, I think also there's something from a psychological perspective to the fact that they lost 30-22. You know, so you tell yourself, man, they had one possession. You know, they had it right there. You know, if you just get the tar kicked out of you, and it's well, okay, we never had a chance. You know what I mean? And so I think the score is misleading in that way. And I think it's just the deflating part is you were in that game. You know, somehow, some way, everything that went wrong, you were in that game. But they weren't in that game. I think that's what's important to know. I mean, yeah, from a numerical standpoint, they were. But the team that decided to run right up the middle on 4th-and-1 had no business competing with the Rams. And that's what happened. So I want to start there when it comes to the game itself. 4th-and-1, Tony. The entire world knows that the Cowboys are handing the ball off to Zeke. Jerry Jones said on 105.3 The Fan on Tuesday that he's not the biggest fan of moving the ball backwards in situations like that because you turn around to hand it off. He said he thought Dak should have snuck it, and because Dak's a great sneaker. What do you think? I mean, it's easy to kill the call now, but, I mean, they're a team that's supposed to get that yard, but the whole world knew they were going to try.
Well, and, you know, and that's the thing about it. It's a state of mind. And there's a lot of teams that can say, look, we're going to run the football 4th-and-1, and guess who's going to get it, number 21? And so there's a big target on his back. And I think there's got to be, a play call, if you look at it, either the quarterback sneak or, you know, Zeke in the backfield. But, you know, 1 yard is not a whole lot. And I think it's different now in modern-day football because statistically when you look at this year in the National Football League, how many teams converted, hell, not only in just 4th-and-1, we're talking about 4th-and-5. You know, that kind of that range between 4th-and-1 and 4th-and-3, teams are going to go for it. But I think that you have to – you got to look at – because during the course of the game, I mean, the Cowboys went for it. I mean, there's times that we went on a 4th down and they converted. And, you know, look at the Rams that did the same thing. But I think that that's kind of like, you know, sending a message. 4th-and-1, you guys aren't going to be able to stop us. But if you got guys on the other side of the line of scrimmage that are creating opportunities for the defense and really making it very difficult for the Cowboys to move the line of scrimmage – but I have no problem with that play call. I mean, the Rams made a good play, and it's mano a mano, and you know we're going to run it down your throat. And look, big fellas, we're going to challenge it, and if you try to stop us, and sometimes that happens. I mean, I'd have no qualms about that. I think I would have done the same thing.
You said something that I think is emblematic of who the Cowboys are and who they've been for a long time. you said, you're going to have to stop us. And I think that that's kind of the approach that the Cowboys take. And that's a good approach. I've said for years now, unfortunately, that that is a really arrogant thing to think. And to be clear, arrogance isn't necessarily bad. You know, you can be arrogant, and as long as you pull it off and you have a reason to be arrogant, well, cool, man. You know, be arrogant. That's up to you. But the Cowboys operate that way, you know, from a perspective of, oh, we're the Dallas Cowboys and we have this great offensive line and we have Ezekiel Elliott. We're gonna run this and we're gonna run it down your throat and you're gonna have to stop us. Where, you know, if you injected a little bit of humility there, you would say, okay, you know what, man? They've got Ndamukong Suh. They've got Aaron Donald. Maybe it's not the smartest idea to run it right in there and try to just prove that we're stronger or better than them. Let's get crafty. Let's get cheeky. Let's do something weird. And they refuse. They insist on trying to, you know, prove that their way is right. And when they do, they look smart. When they don't, they look dumb.
And you know, sometimes, you know, on this show, we can agree to disagree. And I understand your point. Humility's good, you know, to be, I think that, you know, it's good to be humbled, but I mean, I think in the point and in that game, you had to really just kind of challenge yourself. And well, yeah, with utmost respect for the Rams on their defensive line, I mean, they're tremendous talent. I mean, they're a good team, but again, you're on the road and it's fourth and one. And, you know, I don't care who's on the line of scrimmage. You got, you know, whoever's lined up, I mean, if you line up and try to run over your all-pro, all-world, future Hall of Famer, Zach Martin, and look, I mean, those guys on the side, I always say this, all those guys on the other dudes on the other side of the line of scrimmage are getting paid a lot of money just like you.
Right.
And especially Ndamukong Suh, and that's what they're paid for. And, you know, had they be able to convert, it's like, yeah, you know, look, you guys aren't going to stop us. 20 yards.
You're so geniuses that, if you pull theory, it off. Yeah.
The theory on that works. But then you look on the opposite of it, and you can say, well, why in the hell did they play action, RPO? Because you see a lot of teams in the National Football League that do that a lot. And to me, it kind of drives me crazy. I think that's kind of, I don't know, some teams it's not as a high percentage play. But I think when you look at Dallas, they're not maybe a team that really fits that mold based on who their play caller is and what they're made of. And 1 yard, to me, is not that big a deal. I mean, to me, that's where the other team – and now that's a slippery slope, because then you're thinking, okay, if we don't get the yard, guess what? That other team on the other side, they're gonna man up and say, I told you, you try it again, big fella. You know, try to come on our lawn one more time, and you're not coming on our lawn.
It is one of those things where if it works, you're a genius. If it doesn't, you're an idiot. And that's just the way playoff mentality is, unfortunately. But that's why all these guys are in this business, because they can deal with it. Before we talk about, you mentioned the offensive coordinator. That's a big, big, big subject that we're going to get into. The last real thing on this game, because the game sucked, the Cowboys lost. Marcus Peters, Rams cornerback, after the game, we saw him get into it during the game with Amari Cooper, right before Amari scored his touchdown. After the game, Marcus Peters spoke to NFL Media's Mike Silver, and he said, tell Coop, I thought he knew us. He said he played us 2 times a year. That's 12 times he played against me and Tlaib, because he played for the Chiefs and Tlaib and Broncos.
Right.
I think he got strapped tonight. He got that touchdown, but he didn't do blank. He didn't say something kind, Tony. He didn't do blank. I choked him out. He couldn't do nothing. He was crying for his mama. That's how he is. That's why the Raiders got rid of him.
Man, that's some harsh words.
Well,
crying for your mama.
Yeah,
I saw it after the game. The whole skirmish where Amari Cooper, whatever he said to Amari Cooper. I mean, Amari Cooper looks like this guy that's kind of laid back, and he's got that, you know, that baby face, and doesn't look like, you know, he has that bad of a temper. But after the game, he went after him. So whatever words went in between these dudes. But I don't know about choking him out. I mean, really? How can you make that comment?
Yeah, I don't think that Amari got strapped either. Amari had 6 catches, 65 right, yards, and the touchdown. He was tied for the third most yards in the game. The only one player on both teams caught a touchdown. Obviously, there were a lot of rushing touchdowns for the Rams, but the only receiving touchdown was caught by Amari Cooper. And Marcus Peters kind of got destroyed by Michael Gallup. So
yeah, he got kind of funked on that play, didn't he?
I just kind of look, I recognize that, and believe me, I love to trash talk. And when you win, you can trash talk. When you sit atop the mountain, you can do it. It's that arrogance thing. You know, if you've earned the right, be arrogant. That's your call. It's up to you how you want to handle things. I have really zero issue with Marcus Peters flexing that muscle, but it just is kind of factually incorrect. That's the part that I think is a little absurd here.
Well, it just sounds like he waited till after the game, which, you know, is fine. Maybe they, you know, I watched the game. I really didn't notice him even, you know, jawing at each other. It wasn't like Josh Norman playing Dez Bryant or mm-hmm. some of these other teams, you know, just going at it. But I'd have to disagree with what Marcus Peters, the comments he made about, you know, strapping him and Amari Cooper not having a very good football game because – you know, Amari Cooper, unless he's talking about over 100 yards, I mean, I guess that's a moral victory. But, look, if you win, you got the hall pass to talk as much smack. And, you know, here's the thing about, you know, smack talk is we all do it. And, you know, there's guys that are better than others at it. Is that you got to remember that there's an unwritten rule personally. You go to – there's the boundaries in which you put yourself and start talking about personal things. And look, I get it mm-hmm. because I think for defensive back and a receiver, you got to get into it. You got to get into their head. But again, I was just so I was really surprised that Amari Cooper reacted to that. I mean, he really said something to piss him off to let him you know react that way.
I also feel like it's 2019. Saying crying for his mama is not really like an insult. You know, like you know, it just it's a really
I
lame.
Cry for my mama every night. Yeah. I'm double nickel.
What's the worst thing that you've heard on a football field from trash talk in that world?
I mean, do you really want to hear? I mean, you know what? I've had people talk. You know, I think most of the people, you know, most of the things are said to me, but more racial.
Really?
About me being Hispanic and, you know, just remember some of the slang that goes along with being Hispanic. And that really pissed me off. But I tell you, the worst thing that ever happened was with in a playoff game against Carolina. And this is this has happened to me physically, mm-hmm. basically violated me. And this was after a play and we're in the scrum, you know, the pile and I'm getting up and a guy named Sean Love would play for the Carolina Panthers. He wasn't showing any love because he took his elbow and tried to knock, you know, my reproductive system up through my,
yeah, it's an interesting,
through my throat.
That's an interesting scientific
way
to put it.
The sun doesn't shine, and I had to retaliate. So that was dirty. That was just something you don't do. But, you know, I think those a lot of things that happen. I think more of the racial innuendos that guys used to chirp out. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's really reacted to me. And then when that happened with Sean Love, I'm the last guy that retaliated. Got a 15-yard personal foul, and I go on the sidelines, and Jimmy's bitching at me and yelling at me. I'm like, Coach, you don't know what he did. He goes, what'd he do? He goes, oh, it's okay. Just don't do it again. Nice. I totally understand that.
Jimmy's like, okay, Tony, that's all good. Go get some ice, and then
get some peas to put on the put on.
Okay, well, so Marcus Peters kind of wrong, actually really wrong, but whatever. You know, do your thing. I hope Michael Thomas goes for 200 yards in the NFC Championship game, but we'll see. So I'm gonna be real, Tony. Your boy Jason Garrett had maybe his worst day ever in front of the media on Monday. And we're talking about a guy that is really polished and really smart and really well put together, doesn't really get phased often. And he had, I mean, a wreck of a day on Monday in front of microphones. So here's the timeline. Monday morning, and this is 2 days after the Cowboys lost, obviously. Monday morning, he goes on 105.3 The Fan, and he says that Scott Linehan will return as the team's offensive coordinator. Holy crap. The internet explodes. Everybody's upset. Everybody's pissed off. Oh, God. The world's on
fire. Was it April 1st? Maybe he thought it was April 1st or maybe it was April Fool's joke or something.
Maybe it was like, you know how on your computer you can change the time? Like somebody changed his time in his head.
Exactly.
But so he says that, and a few hours later, Stephen Jones cleans up the mess. Goes on 105.3 The Fan himself, says, hey, man, you know what, bro? We're still figuring stuff out. No, ain't no thing. Don't read into anything. It's all good. okay, thanks, Steven, we're good. All right. And then Garrett goes in front of all of the media and all of the world in his press conference to end the season, and he's asked, hey, dude, what was it that you said this morning about Scott Linehan? And he says, oh, I don't know what I said. What? You don't know what you said? Okay, fine. And, you know, for what it's worth, he got a little snappy. Clarence Hill asked him about offensive scheme, and he put Chill on the spot and said, can you describe the offensive scheme? No, he can't describe the offensive scheme. He's not the head coach. It's not his job. Anyway, so after Jason Garrett walks back the comments himself, because he might have gotten a talking to, then it's reported by the Dallas Morning News that regardless of what he said or how he said it, that Jason Garrett intends on Scott Linehan returning to the team as the offensive coordinator in 2019. And finally, on Tuesday morning, I know this isn't Monday, Jerry Jones on 105.3 basically says, hey, we still got to figure stuff out. So Garrett, I mean, yo-yoed all day long. I don't understand. I mean, maybe the season had been a long, exhausting experience and he finally broke down. But goodness gracious, this was a mess.
Yeah, I find it really kind of unusual for a head coach to come out right after the 2 days later and make this, I guess, it was on Monday whenever they did the press conference with him to make statements like that, because, everything's kind of unsettled. You know, you're coming off, it's almost like you're coming off a game and someone asks you a question and it's a heat of the moment and you may not give the right answer because of just the way, emotionally how you're affected, and depends on, the lines of the question and everything. And I just felt like Jason, the best thing he should have said is not even answer that question, because I don't think he knew.
Yeah.
And it just makes him really look how what everyone
– it makes him exactly look like a
what
puppet.
Everyone views him as someone that has no
– influence. Power. Yeah.
To be able to make a statement like that. No, and she looked bad, and it's like, Jason, you didn't have to say that because you don't know. It's like it's like a player. Like, well, after we lose, what do you say? It's like the typical, the question or answer to the question. What do you think after the season was going to have? Well, everybody's going to be evaluated. No one has yada yada. No one's has job security and all that. It's exactly what he should have said. And I don't know what, compelled him to say that he was trying to protect Scott Linehan. And maybe I'll give him credit for setting up protecting and about the play caller and really just supporting him, but this really made him look like a buffoon.
See, I see that line of thought. Certainly, man, respect, you went to bat for your guy, whatever. I get that's certainly one line of logic. But where is the respect for the product? Where is the respect for the result? You know what I mean? Because as buddy-buddy as you might be with Scott Linehan, at the very least, he's putting your ass in jeopardy. You know what I mean? Right. Like, at the very least, show some self-respect for the fact that this guy is sinking your operation instead of, it seems like in that moment the priority was Scott Linehan as opposed to the Dallas Cowboys, and that's where I think the mess started.
Well, let me ask you this. Do you think Scott Linehan was a problem, was the reason why the Cowboys lost that game?
I think so. I mean, maybe not. I mean, so if you say, was Scott Linehan the single reason why the Cowboys lost to the Los Angeles Rams on Saturday night? I don't know. But I think he was because, he's been a symptom for so long.
Oh, I understand the symptom, but I'm talking about because I think here's my whole thought process. The reason why I ask you that, because it's kind of a moving part when it comes to, the whole game and everything. Things aren't going to be good as the game before and in 3 weeks prior to that or whatever. Depends on the situation. But, I think that, Scott Linehan, there's been this outcry because there's so many because you just played Sean McVay. Mm-hmm. And you're looking at this guy and you just totally, see the defense of the Cowboys, just, as I said, just so on their heels and confused.
Sure.
And it's like they haven't seen this before. Like they never watched film on them because there's so much stuff going on. They can't process it.
Right.
So I think that's where this comes from. But, it's a game-by-game deal. And, Scott Linehan, I think, needs to be – I think they need to make a change, definitely.
Well,
it's not going to – and I look – taking it further, I even think maybe they need to change – Jason Garrett's got to go because the question that that Jerry's going to have to ask himself. If he was to make a change with Jason Garrett, one, how close is this team? Mm-hmm. All right. How close is this team to getting beyond the second round of the playoffs into the MC Championship game where they want to go because it's been so damn long?
Right.
Second of all, the guy that they bring in, is he going to get them there? Is he going to be able to catapult as a play caller or whatever? Is it going to be better? Because I really think Jerry Jones, he's got to think about this because he's not a young dude anymore, okay? So I don't think he wants to go that route, but the team is close. And so I think those are the two questions he has to ask, without a doubt, RJ.
Well,
I mean, I do not disagree. They definitely need to make a change at the play caller position. And again, I don't like a guy to get fired, but he's been here a long time.
Sure.
And it's not innovated enough. It's not enough innovated enough offense.
It goes without saying we don't wish ill on anybody.
Exactly.
You know,
we've all been fired before. It's not fun.
Right, but it is worth pointing out that Jerry said on Tuesday that if Jason Garrett had been available in the coaching cycle, which is 2 weeks old now because teams that didn't make the playoffs have already made changes, and we've seen head coaches. There's only one head coach opening left. Jerry Jones said that if Jason Garrett had been available then, that he would have had 5 offers. And everybody kind of was like, what?
I agree with that. Well, I agree with that, without a doubt.
Ian Rappaport of NFL Network tweeted that he was right. So, I mean, one of the top NFL insiders.
But everybody's like, okay, well, everybody thinks Jason Garrett is this bad coach. I think it's just like anything else. It's like a marriage. You know, you get into marriage and you've been married for a long time and, you know, it's – you're trying to go to marriage counseling and try to spice things up a little bit. There's some things that change and, you know, you try to work it out. But, you know, at the end of the day, it's like it's not working out. We need to part ways. I think it's on a marriage with Jason Garrett and the Cowboys. You know, once he, you know, that relationship and the spark wears out, he goes on and marries someone else. And I agree with that. There's other teams that would take someone like Jason Garrett because he's got experience. And it is a league of not retreads, but I think Jason Garrett still is a better coach than a lot of these guys that they're hiring. Look at the guys they've hired in the last 2 weeks, RJ. I mean, you can make a great case. Look at some of the guys that are getting jobs right now.
I mean, there's no –
you don't think Jason Garrett's better than the guys that they coach? Now, he hasn't been good as – he's the ceiling. I mean, he has reached the ceiling, I think, with the Cowboys as far as – which direction this franchise is going to go, but other places, it would be a new babe.
Well, so on the ceiling thing, I don't know that he's quite at the ceiling yet. I mean, to give him just a small ounce of credit,
you're going to go that far.
Well, check this out. Do you remember in Willy Wonka, the movie version? I'm talking Willy Wonka.
Which one?
The OG. Not Charlie and the Chocolate Factory, Willy Wonka.
I remember that one too.
Yeah. You remember the
Johnny
scene?
Depp?
Yeah, that one's weird. The scene where Charlie and his grandpa, they're in the like weird machine or whatever, and they're rising in the fan is up there, you know what I'm talking about?
Yeah,
and
exactly.
And they're at the top, and they're not quite at the blades yet, you know what I mean? They start freaking out, and then they start burping. Garrett is like at that point. Like, you know, like he's almost there, and every time they suck is a burp, and that's why he falls down.
Yeah.
But, you know, okay, so I think, for what it's worth, for my opinion, I think Jason Garrett deserves to return. This team was 3-5. He yanked him out of hell. There's a lot to be said about the culture that this dude has built. We all agree there. Losing to the Rams doesn't change that. And I still think he deserves to be the Cowboys head coach, in spite of how hard he got punked on Monday. Because not only did he get punked in terms of, you know, walking back his own words, not only did he get punked in terms of looking like he didn't have a lot of power, but he was straight up asked during his press conference at the Star if he felt like he had power, and he literally came out and said, well, Jerry Jones owns the team. And I mean, what else is he supposed to say? I think he's being true, but it makes him look like a punk. It was a very, very bad public relations day for Jason Garrett. And he even said that he nor his representation have had any talks with the Jones family about extending his contract. So I think Garrett deserves to stay. But you mentioned, you know, marriage and divorce and things like that. Garrett and Linehan are staying together for the kids. Dude, the kids are out of the house. They're off in school. You guys need a breakup. That is really, really, really toxic. And Scott, I mean, so at one point, Tony, I don't know if you know this, In 2017, not this past season, but in 2017, when the Cowboys went to Atlanta and then hosted the Eagles and then the Chargers on Thanksgiving, they scored in the single digits in three straight games. That had never happened before in the history of the Dallas Cowboys. And they brought that dude back. And not only did they bring that dude back, but they literally customized the offense exactly how he wanted. He got rid of all the coaches he didn't like. He got to promote Kellen Moore to be his quarterback's coach. He got to bring in Sanjay Lal to be his receiver's coach. They brought Paul Alexander in to be his offensive line coach, and they had to fire him. I mean, Scott Alexander got a custom-tailored suit, and he just showed up to the dance, and he won't go on the dance floor. And you know what, dude? You got everything you wanted. It's time for you. Somebody has to answer, and that's the name and the position that makes the most sense.
I hear you on the, everything you just said, but I'm going to go back to Jason Garrett because I think someone brought a great point on Twitter, social media, whatever it was. If you go back this year, and you look at the struggles this team had at 3-5, and I agree with you. And we talked about the we talked about this on our podcast week in and week out when they went into this run after they went 3-5. I'll give them credit for that. But think about those games in which they were 3-5. And I know they didn't have Amari Cooper. I understand that. And maybe it would have been different. Maybe they would have won and went 5-3. Who knows? Mm-hmm. But all I know is that you win two or three of those games, or maybe two of those games, you may have home field advantage. And I think that that's an important thing that you have to look at. Not to say it would happen, but it's got to be, there's got to be some credence. There's got to be some emphasis on winning during the season. And I know we talk about it playing great in December, but then when you start thinking about this, you go on the road and we'll talk about this, the two games this weekend, in which I think both road teams are going to win those games. I think you have to really understand, 3-5. Well, what could the coaching staff, what could they have done better where they could have had more wins and had maybe the possibility of getting some home field advantage to the playoffs? Not that it could have been done, but that's the kind of, I guess, the questions that come up. And when you look at, when you're talking about maybe making a change, are things going to be better next year, RJ?
Well, to
your, is this team going to be better than they were this year? Where are they going to, in what categories they going to get better at? I mean, there's a lot of things that need to be answered, and it's not going to be 2 days after the loss.
Right.
Jason Garrett can't get in front of you and give you all those answers.
I think it's worth I think the best way to encapsulate your point is, okay, so we give them, I think they deserve the credit, but we give them all this credit for coming back from 3-5, winning those five in a row that we thought they were going to lose, right, and everything. But to your point, they started 3-5. They're the same coaches that started 3-5, and you're right, they didn't have Amari Cooper, whatever, but they're the team that started the season without a number one wide receiver. You know, they made the decisions to do things that led them to being 3-5.
And I'll give them credit for that. That's in the Jason Garrett category.
But that's the glass half full mentality. Mm-hmm. And the glass half empty one is, for example, the Cowboys won 11 games this season, counting the playoff win over the Seahawks. Of those 11 wins, 10 of them were by one possession. Think about how, if Brett Maher doesn't make a field goal against the Detroit Lions or the Atlanta Falcons, they lose those two games. If Amari Cooper doesn't catch a bounce off of Rasul Douglas's hands against Philadelphia, later in the season, they probably lose that game. I mean, that's three games right there that freak plays have you winning. So, the same way.
And also, you can say the same thing for the 3-5. Some of those five games that they lost, the margin
game,
of win losses is not very big.
Well, the reason I say that is because I think, and I know that I'm taking the stance that Garrett should return, but I think we have to be careful with that because they're so clearly on the edge. You know what I mean? They're a hard gust of wind away from being, closer to the other side of the spectrum. Those few things, those five or six, call them 10 random moments in a season, seven of them went their way this year. And that's why they ended up with a 10-6 record. But a lot of seasons, we talk about this all the time. Weird things happen, random things happen, and they don't go your way. I mean, how many teams would have won four more games if, a certain thing had gone well one way or the other? And that's kind of where they're at. I think saying they're a 10-win team is a bit of a shine on who they are, because you could look at certain things being, you know, really, really close to being bad. But that's why Scott Linehan has to go. Because, I mean, again, you won 10 games by one possession. You should have, I mean, we talked about this then. They beat the Saints, and that's awesome. But they beat them 13-10. They should have won that game 35-10. I mean, they dominated. And I just think they're at a point where it doesn't, you can't justify firing Jason Garrett totally. But you can justify firing Scott Linehan. And for me, part of why I want, or the part of me that wants Jason Garrett gone in this exact moment is the part of Jason Garrett that has yet to let go of Scott Linehan, because holding on to him has been a weakness of his.
Well, I mean, you know, Jason Garrett doesn't make the, I don't know how much power you want to get him, but I don't know as far as making the decision. Is he the final decision maker when it comes to keeping an offensive coordinator? Maybe, and maybe they work good together, and there's been promises that this offense is going to change and Dak friendly and everything else. And so here's the thing that I really want them to really focus on the offseason. What do we need to do to – let's go after the season, after the smoke is cleared and they crown a new Super Bowl champion, let's go back and let's look at all the top offenses in the National Football League, and let's look at points per game. Mm-hmm. And that's what we're going to focus on. We're going to try to manufacture a type of offense where we can – the ceiling's a lot higher than what this team was this year. What was it, 22, 23 points, something like that? Mm-hmm. Wasn't very high.
It was 22 after Amari joined them.
All right, well, 22, okay. 22 points. And, you know, maybe that's – maybe in the middle of the pack in the National Football League. I think a lot of people think that every team – and it scores 28 points, which is not the case. Mm-hmm. But at least the ceiling of the high part of the what this team can go to when it comes to scoring points. I mean, can they max out? Can there be games when they play someone they can put 42 up on you or 35? Not three or four field goals, not touchdowns by the offense. I'm talking about pure offensive production. And look at it that way, in a forensic way, where you're going to change a play caller. You need to bring someone in here. You know, Kellen Moore may not be the dude for Dak Prescott. They bring in a quarterback whisperer, a guy that wants to, you know, maybe not be an offensive coordinator now, but is really good with working with quarterbacks and has this kind of nuance, you know, with working with guys like that. But I think, to me, that's what I'd really like to see them focus on in the offseason. Look at that category and find some formula in which they can get there and really, really work on points per game.
Well, it's an offensive league. We know that. And I think that we all have to be careful assuming, next season they just got to, do a little bit more on offense. The defense will do its thing. It doesn't work that way. I mean, rewind a year. You know, we're getting ready, as you mentioned, for the conference championships. A year ago, the Minnesota Vikings were getting ready to play in the NFC Championship, and the Jacksonville Jaguars getting to play in the AFC Championship game. Those two teams, everybody thought, those defenses, that's the key. Huh. They're going to be fine. They're going to be there next season. They'll take the next step. They'll compete, whatever, and they both cratered this season. Now, that
how about the San Diego – excuse me. I keep saying San – how about the L.A. Chargers against Tom Brady?
Right.
I mean, they didn't even get off the plane.
Right. Nothing is guaranteed, season to season, even week to week to that point. And so you don't necessarily – you're not going to necessarily have the hot boys again next year. You know, it's –
boy, there were some cold boys that night. I'm surprised you didn't sense – I thought for sure someone would make a meme of the cold boys or something like that, they were on ice that night.
Well, I tell you what, it's been cold, at least here in San Antonio. So we've had some fires going lately in the fireplace, and that's the only hot boys that's really been going on. But I mean,
but they had a tremendous year. It's just
sure,
it was just very yeah.
It's not guaranteed again. You know?
No, it's not.
And that's the painful part of losing, and that's the hard part and the part that everybody's pissed off about. But I think so. The line of the offseason is, we got to get to an NFC championship. And it's true that I guarantee, not you specifically, Tony, obviously, but if you're listening, I guarantee you that everybody wants to go to the NFC championship game. Everybody wants to go to the Super Bowl. Everybody wants to win it. But I think that this is important. Okay.
Should I have my tickets already? Plane tickets for New Orleans.
Well, that would have been a good time. Okay, Tony. So the Cowboys have been in the divisional round in 3 of the last 5 years, 2014, 2016, 2018. In that time, that's 5 whole seasons. Do you know how many teams have been at least to that point? So we're talking how many different teams in 5 years have at least 3 times gotten to the divisional round? I know that's kind of a specific thing.
I think it's going to be a lot less than people think. I'm going to go...
How many teams have gotten to the divisional round at least 3 times in the last 5 years, counting 2018?
Well, I know that. Let's see. I'm going to say 4.
You're close.
3?
It's 6. 6 teams.
Oh, 6. Wow, I thought it would be a little lower than that. So, which teams are those?
So these are the 6 teams. So this is the company that the Cowboys are in. This is how successful, if you want to call it that, that they are.
The
New England Patriots, they've been there every
Packers.
Year. The Green Bay Packers. But the Green Bay Packers haven't done it. They haven't even been to the playoffs in each of the last 2 seasons.
Oh, that's true, yeah.
The Seattle Seahawks have been 4 times in the last 5 years. Mm-hmm. The Pittsburgh Steelers, although they obviously missed the playoffs this season. And the Kansas City Chiefs, who have been there 3 times as well. So think about those. Those are the teams, you know, that we're talking about. And again, I know this is a really specific stat, divisional round, 3 out of 5 years, whatever. But the point is that 60% of the time.
Did you say the Saints?
Nope, not the Saints.
Wow, I mean, everybody wants to associate winning with the Saints.
Well, they missed the playoffs 3 years in a row. 14,
that's right. That's
16.
Right.
So those 6 teams, and of those 6 teams, we're talking the Patriots, Packers, Seahawks, Steelers, Chiefs, and Cowboys. Only 2 of them have done this with different quarterbacks. Obviously, the Dallas Cowboys, Tony Romo and Dak Prescott, mm-hmm. and the Kansas City Chiefs with Alex Smith and now Patrick Mahomes. Think about that. Think about how difficult that is, that the Cowboys, they have been a game away from the NFC title game 3 times out of the last 5 years, and that they have done that with different quarterbacks, different running backs, different star linebackers, different defensive ends, different cornerbacks. I mean, that says a lot. Is it enough? No, but it says a lot, and I think that that needs to be said. And that's, I wrote something on Tuesday. I called it the both and. The both and is a paradox of sorts, mm-hmm. where multiple things can be true. And it can be true that the Cowboys have had success and that they have not had enough success. And that's why I'm saying, like, you got to give them a pat on the back.
Yeah, but I understand that. But how many of those teams you just mentioned, how many of those teams have been in the AFC and NFC championship game?
All of the 5, except for the Cowboys.
Exactly.
They've all advanced.
That is, and look, it's progress.
It is.
But it's progress, but come on, man.
Well, but let's peel that onion back. So, for example, and I'm not at all saying the Cowboys are any of these teams. But the Patriots, for example, in the division around, they've gotten matchups against Brock Osweiler. You know what I mean? They've had things like that that have just been nothing in front of them. The Cowboys they're 0-3 in this stretch, don't get me wrong. But they're 0-3 because of 2 freak plays against the Green Bay Packers, who have the best quarterback in the NFL.
That still hurts watching that.
Sure.
That play.
And their most recent loss was against the team that the world acknowledges has the best and most promising young head coach in the NFL. You know, yeah. they're not – if they were losing these games to, you know, Christian Ponder or Blaine Gabbert or whatever, then yeah, dunk on them. They're trash. But they are losing these games because of these absurd things that keep happening to them. It's, you know, I think that's important context.
But it's not a league of almost, RJ.
It's not.
Okay.
It's
and,
not.
And look, I understand that. I mean, I think that we just want to show and I guess not, you know, illustrate or just, you know, point out that the good part of this, and it's not all that bad, and that there has been some, there is a little silver lining. Okay. But I think it's been so damn long, and you know, it's been 23 years. And so the expectation, you cannot have this false expectation every time the Cowboys get in the playoffs, to either 1-done or 2-done, and they're not able to go ahead and grind it out and get to that last third NFC championship game maybe. And then that much closer to the Super Bowl. I understand that. But going back to the coaching staff, that's what you got to ask again yourself, is how close is this team, and how close is a coach who ever comes back, Jason Garrett, how close is he get to getting them there? Because as you just mentioned, They're close, almost. But almost doesn't win anything for you.
Well, okay, so they are close. And let me be clear, I'm not a fan of almost.
I understand that. But I'm just trying to make a point that, right, I think a lot of – there's part of people that – I don't think people want to hear that now.
They don't, but I'm only cautioning that there are multiple points. You know, one point is that they have failed and that they haven't gotten there.
And I understand they're doing better than 75% of the other national, you know, teams in the National Football League that have played. I get that.
Would you rather be – and again, I realize you want to win the Super Bowl, and everybody does. But would you rather be the Cowboys, who have been to three of the last five divisional rounds, or would you rather be the Vikings, who went to one NFC championship game in that stretch and got blown out by the Eagles? I mean, that's all I'm saying is things
can be a lot worse.
Well, I understand.
I mean, that's a no-brainer. But again, you're talking about the Vikings and the Cowboys.
Right.
A team that everyone either loves or hates and gets tired of hearing about how great they are when they haven't been to an NFC championship game in over two decades.
Well, so I agree, first of all. I'm the
person and the reality part. I try to like tell people that look at what they've done. They're making progress, and so, you know, Stephen A. Dick. I mean Smith. I'm I might have to edit that out.
No, we're leaving that in. That ain't going nowhere.
But my point is that there's so many people that just want to jump on that the bandwagon of hate. When Dallas, again, they kind of tease you a little bit. And, I was drinking the Kool-Aid. Well, when what we do in the media, we're supposed to be a little bit objective. But, hey, that's my team, man. I mean, I got some skins on the wall when it comes to with them. And when I feel like I've got this feeling that they're going to go further, then the expectation is a little higher. But, I think that's the thing, that they've been gone for so long from the mix of being relevant. And now when they get close and they're supposed to be, you know, they have great defense and offensively, it's like, this is the time. And I just think that that's the disappointment of a lot of fans, that when they start hearing that, and of course people jump on again, the hate bandwagon for the Cowboys because everyone still talks about them, but that's that seems like to me. Well, I know that's been a narrative around here for too long.
Well, so I think that that's all true, and certainly people love to hate, and people are really upset that they haven't achieved certain things. But it could be. I mean, the fact that it could be worse doesn't make it better, but it is true that it could be worse. That's all I'm saying. That's not enough, but that is true. You know what I mean?
It could be worse. I could have gotten knocked out the first round.
Well, that's true. But so
I'm just trying to process and I understand where you're coming from, RJ. But you can't. There's got to be a higher expectation.
Totally.
And look, I'm not here on Tuesday. I'm not trying to just bash the Cowboys again. I think there's a lot of great things that happened this year, a lot of great things on the horizon for this team that they're going to build off. They're going to become better. I think there's a lot. There's the sky's the limit. But again, when you play, it's like the defense. I mean, and God bless those dudes. Those players, they played their ass off the whole year. But they just got – you could just see the sense of just defeat. And again, I as a linebacker, and I think what you saw is that you saw the inexperience of someone like Leighton Vander Esch and Jalen Smith, some of these exotic formations. And they even made the comment that they knew the tendencies, some of the games that the defensive linemen running. But, I mean, I don't believe that. I mean, we do that. But you just saw the – just the inability and again, being discombobulated. And C.J. Anderson, how about that guy? He's been to three different teams, and he hung – we're all talking about Todd Gurley. We didn't even talk about C.J. Anderson. That dude went off.
I agree that, C.J. Anderson was a nightmare. I want to go back. You used a word that I almost brought up way earlier in the episode. You used the word tease, and that's who the Cowboys are, honestly. I mean, they are a tease. Think about it. Of their 11 wins, 10 were by one possession. I mean, they tease you down to the wire. And even, I think we agree that 8 points is really misleading. They lost by more than 8 points from, you know, a reality standpoint to the Rams. Yeah, but
the scoreboard wasn't indicative of what how bad it was.
But because they're down by eight in those final moments, you're being teased. You're thinking, okay, man, it's third down. They don't have any timeouts, but they can get the ball back. They're teasing you. They are the most entertaining team, and it's almost, and people are going to say, that's what Jerry does, but obviously that's not the case. It's almost as if they sat down and decided, okay, what kind of football team could we become that would literally be the most entertaining thing to watch? You know, and that's what they're appointment reality television. That's what they are. And it's time for them to be more than that. And I think we all agree. Some news, though, Tony, that dropped on Tuesday that is certainly worth discussing when it comes to all this, because news is going to continue to cycle out. And for people that are concerned, the 750, we ain't going nowhere, man.
We're continuing.
We ain't going nowhere.
I talked you into doing six more months, hopefully.
You mean six or 6,000? Because I said
6,000. However long, how many episodes we can rack up, brother.
The off season does not impact us. We'll be going and talking Cowboys all off season long. We'll have some guests. Hopefully we got some fun plans in store. But from a news perspective, Leighton Vander Esch, you mentioned just a second ago, headed to the Pro Bowl. He is headed to the Pro Bowl. It's alternate season, guys that are hurt and going to be playing in the Super Bowl. So Leighton Vander Esch is headed to the Pro Bowl. I'm going to be honest. If you go as an alternate, I don't really view you as a Pro Bowler, because you weren't. And I don't think that the Pro Bowl is like a huge compliment anymore. But good for him. I mean, I hope he enjoys it.
I just think the fact that you're able to play and I hate to tell you this, I was an alternate a lot of times, and I never got in because no one got hurt.
I mean, these days, because back then being an alternate was a real thing.
I think it's a little bit more symbolic, and now I think it's still just until the novelty really wears off, because the least thing you want to do is a lot of these guys that haven't been doing anything for the last month, it's going to be a month, is go, you know, bang on someone.
Well, but all I'm
saying, it's not like that anymore. It's more like a 7-on-7, which, hey, that's what it should be, like an NBA All-Star game. But back to Leighton Vander Esch, congratulations. The kid had a tremendous year, and you know, the fact that he's probably got a nice little incentive in his contract if he makes the Pro Bowl, which he's in the Pro Bowl, so technically he's in, is a huge accomplishment for him.
Totally.
Didn't play like that the last game, though.
Right, I agree.
No one on that team did.
No, but see, that's my problem with the pro. It's like now you got healthy guys who just don't go because their egos are bruised. You know what I mean? And so you end up with like Blake Bortles there. Like the current Pro Bowl is so watered down. But I mean, it is a great point, a great thing for Leighton Vander Esch. So he's headed to the Pro Bowl. Somebody who is headed back to the Cowboys, Mark Colombo, Cowboys offensive line coach, will return to the team. Your thoughts?
I think it's a great choice. I really, you know, after they parted ways with the offensive coach earlier on this season, was it Paul Alexander, I believe. Mm-hmm. But anyway, I thought it was a change in delivery and fiery and a coach. And I think at that point when they had so many guys that were banged up, you know, Travis Frederick was gone the whole year with that just unusual diagnosis he got.
The Guillain-Barré, it was.
Yeah, I can't even pronounce an autoimmune issue, but hopefully he'll come back. And I think that he's a good deliverer. He's a very good communicator, and I think guys really respect him, and I think he can teach them a lot of things. He's a tremendous player, but I'm glad they brought him back. That's good to be able to bring someone back and, you know, along with Scott Linehan. He'll have the opportunity. Just making sure you're awake.
Hey, first of all, by the way, we in particular love Mark Colombo because he is part of the 7-5 club in Dallas Cowboys history. He wore the 7-5. So I think it's a great decision. He really resonates with the offensive linemen and gets it, obviously having played the position and whatnot. And I think he's close enough in age that, you know, it's not like you're listening to this old man or whatever. You know, he's so, you know, still recently removed from playing, et cetera. But so good for Mark Colombo. The other detail to this is, does this at all concern you? I know you joked about it. that Scott Linehan is staying. Because theoretically...
I was joking.
Well, I know, but theoretically... If you were going to hire a new offensive coordinator,
there's nothing theoretically when it comes. But I'm sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off already, partner. But there's no theory behind that.
If they were
him coming back with Scott Linehan,
I agree. But if they were going to bring in a new offensive coordinator, wouldn't that guy want his own offensive line coach?
Not necessarily. I don't think that when you look at the way. The way the Cowboys hire coaches, and look, and let me just put this out there. Guys like playing – coaches like coming to Dallas because Jerry, it's like family. He treats his coaches great. So I think that that's a great thing for coaches, a good environment. And, no, I think it's the way that these coaches are picked now. And we all – I guess we can all agree that it's not the most conventional place to work when it comes to coaching, because I think a lot of different, you know, coaches are handpicked and offensive coordinators are there, defensive coordinator, and bring an assistant. So no, I don't think you can read into it as much. I think the philosophy is the same, and it doesn't really, you know, delineate too much when it comes to changing his philosophy. So I don't think that that's going to make a difference one way or the other.
Well, good. Well, so we know Colombo's coming back. It seems like Chris Richard isn't going anywhere. Obviously, the Miami Dolphins haven't yet, but are expected to hire Brian Flores when the Patriots season is officially over. So,
you think he was upset on the sidelines?
I think he was pretty pissed off. Yeah, I mean, I think that's an
understatement.
I mentioned Willie.
He was getting in some what we call some bud on that sideline.
Some bud. Well,
but.
Oh, I got you. Well, you know, I mentioned.
I wasn't going to say yes. I would say getting into some ass or whatever. He was chewing some ass.
Well, I was going to say I mentioned Willy Wonka earlier. He was like the little girl, the that freaked out, the pretentious girl. You know what I mean? That was always yelling.
Who was the kid that ate all the blueberries and almost blew up?
That was C.J. Anderson.
What? Oh yeah, that was him. That was his character in Willy Wonka, because he definitely blew up.
And he blew up
the blueberry. Exactly.
Well, so whatever. That took a turn. That took a weird turn. But Colombo's coming back. That's good. I think the next shoe that we're all waiting to drop is either the firing of Scott Linehan or the full endorsement that he will be returning. That's the next. Hurdle that we have to cross, but it is the off season. The Shrine Game's coming up. The Senior Bowl's coming up. It's NFL draft season. Last thing, Tony, before we get out of here.
Well, can I say this before the senior?
Of course.
That may be an indicator because, you know, the Senior Bowl's right after the Super Bowl, correct?
Right. And so all the coaches.
The Shrine Bowl, Senior Bowl, whatever it is. That's where all the scouts and everyone goes down.
In Mobile.
It's a week. Yeah, Mobile. So it's a week after – it's always been the Senior Bowl, but whatever. They change it so many times. But anyway, these guys are one of the prospects going into the National Football League. They're going there, and they're coached by all the staff in the National Football League. Because I know this is a place where all the coaches go. They take their coaching staff. They talk to players and network and interview them the whole week. And this may be a good indication if it hadn't happened before – if Scott Linehan makes that trip.
Well, you know, it's interesting. We mentioned the Pro Bowl. The Cowboys coaches will be coaching in the Pro Bowl, coaching the
NFC
team. So if Scott Linehan's there, get ready for some runs up
there'll be a lot of scoring. There'll be a lot of scoring in that game.
But
I guarantee you that.
But you're right. If Scott
Linehan, be more than 22.
Yeah. If Scott Linehan is it's on the Cowboys Senior Bowl trip, that will be quite telling. So we'll see. We got a few days to decide. Last question, Tom, before we get out of here, and we will be back later in the week. If you could pick a position, just a blanket position, with the Cowboys first pick in the draft, 58th overall in the second round, what position do you want? Without adding any names or anything, if you could just say, I'm getting a really good player at this position, what would you want?
Caden Smith, tight end from Stanford University.
Look at that. You went specific and everything. Wow.
Yeah,
respect.
I know the kid. I don't know. I don't know if that's going to – it'd be nice to get a little Travis Kelce type of guy, but I think that that would be a position I would target. And that's a position they need. Nothing against Blake Jarwin, which had the tremendous year this year, 3 touchdowns. But I think that dude's pretty money. He can do it all. It reminds me a lot of Jason Witten. Has great hands. Excuse me, great hands, and is a good blocker. But yeah, I think the tight end. To me, that'd be a sexy pick. How about yourself?
Well, so it'd be funny, by the way, if they did take him. That would be back to back years the Cowboys drafted a Stanford tight end because they took Dalton Schultz last year. So that'd be interesting.
That's true.
But
he wasn't a first round pick.
Right. Right. Yeah. I mean, I'm just saying. Yeah. But I think, like, keeping it simple for the purposes of today, positionally, there's one of three positions that you gotta get somebody special at. Tight end is one of them. And I'm, by the way, a proponent of signing Jared Cook in free agency, so maybe that answers that. We'll see. I mean, but anyway, tight end's one of them. Safety, but you could solve that in free agency if you want to go Earl Thomas route. Or defensive tackle. You got to get somebody, some big meat there in the middle of that defensive line. Because you
Clemson, Alabama. I mean, there's always, but the Cowboys, well, usually those guys are usually gone by the time the Cowboys get the pick.
We wrote about a mock on Tuesday at BTB, and that mock draft has the Cowboys taking Alabama D tackle Isaiah Bucks. So I mean, we'll see if they want to go their route. But you're right. I mean, they do technically shy away. I mean, it's kind of amazing that they ended up with Amari Cooper, who went to Alabama. But other than that, they did draft Bo Scarborough last year, but that was their first, I believe, their first Alabama draft pick since like 2009. I'm forgetting off the top of my head, but yeah.
Yeah.
Well.
But yeah, I think those positions, but again, I think that you need someone to add to the team that's going to make a contribution. And you just, as you picked, you know, as you just said, the defensive tackle and the blocking the boys, you got the mock draft, which is tremendous. I recommend everyone checking it out. I mean, but it'll be a lot of time to hash it out. But yeah, I think that those two positions right now are always a big need, especially the defensive tackle inside.
For sure. Well, so let's do this song and dance again later this week, Tony. I don't know
why.
I'm not at all insinuating anything, but just because of the Cowboys, I feel like we'll have some news to talk about. You know, it kind of feels like it's headed that way. I don't know.
News never ends, especially on the 750.
That's a great point. That is how we will walk off. Thanks for listening to us. Sorry the Cowboys season is over, but the good news is the 750 is here to stay. I will see you later this week. Have a great one. This was the 750.
Hello, you're listening to Simone de Rochefort, one of the hosts of The Polygon Show. It's a show all about the video games that you'll never have time to play, brought to you by four friends who are just as passionate about food, soft drinks, and TV shows as we are about video games. Every Friday, we bring you a new hour of personal stories, like how we found the best way to play Yakuza 0, or even what happens when you play so much Zelda that you hurt your hands and can't play games anymore. Above all, we just have a really good time talking about the games that we love. Check out the show on Apple Podcasts or your favorite podcatcher. You can also find us at Polygon Show on Twitter and send a tweet to say hi. Thanks for listening.